This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the R-O-C. Ho. Fresh out the frying.
Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast presented by the Boston Herald. Evan Lazar here with Adam Kirchin. Adam, we got a lot to get to today, but quickly, yeah. How are things going?
A lot more than we expected, given what happened to Julian Edelman this weekend. Obviously, bad news for the Patriots. But this is the type of stuff that happens in preseason sometimes. It's an unlucky deal. And it's very unfortunate for Julian, who I thought had a great offseason up until that point. Let's get into that now. In your opinion, how badly does this hurt the offense? Is this something that they can withstand? Or is this a huge, huge blow to lose your number one guy like this?
Right. You know, you don't want to discredit anything that Julian Edelman is worth to this team, or the hard work that he puts in, or what he means to the locker room and any of that stuff. So it's a fine line between, you know, saying that it's going to be a seamless transition to some of these other guys and, you know, between that and saying that Edelman is, you know, him going down ruins everything, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's definitely someplace in the middle of those two things. Now, they obviously have a lot of other options that we'll get into in a second that they can split up the targets and target shares too. So it's not, you know, the end of the world by any means. I don't think anybody thinks that. But, you know, there's some sort of sense of security with having Edelman on the field in tough situations, you know, those third and eights in big spots, you know, the when the Patriots really need a big play, you know, over the last couple of years, it's been 11 that's been getting them. So, right. You know, it's that's a tough blow. But this is why they traded for Brandon Cooks. They traded right. for him to get another receiving, top receiving option, another number one type guy. So now we just have to see how the offense is going to adapt without Edelman out there.
Right, and that's my thought. My main thought here is, you know, a lot of this pressure now is going to fall onto Brandon Cooks. I'm not saying he's going to fill the same role, because he won't, but you're going to need Brandon Cooks to show up every game to provide the deep threat, but also to, you know, to be a guy who can – catch balls over the middle, to line up in the slot when he has to. He has to be the guy that they traded for, giving up a first-round pick. And that's a lot of pressure now. There was pressure on him before, but, you know, now your number one receiver is out. And, you know, there's good receivers on this team, but the reason why you went and got Brandon Cooks was to be a stud, to be a lead dog. And he's going to have to be that now. Now, in practices and all that stuff, he's looked fine. But we haven't seen it yet, of course, from his games in any of the preseason games yet so far. In fact, he had a drop this past weekend. So, you know, you want to see him, you know, really start to take off. And I think he's got the talent to do it. But again, the pressure's on him. You know, he's got to really step up here if the offense wants to reach the type of potential that they can.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just obviously it goes without saying, but we should mention that, you know, the health of Rob Gronkowski now obviously becomes a lot more important. When Gronk is out there on the field, I think that this injury to Edelman, if, you know, Gronk can play the full 18, 19 games, whatever it ends up being, then, you know, it's not as bad. But with us not knowing if we can really count on Gronkowski to be healthy for the entire season, you know, it gets a little bit dicey. But, you know, when you look at what the Patriots are going to do offensively, and it really doesn't change much, in my opinion, with Edelman out, because, you know, the thing hasn't changed in 20 years. They're not going to just change it because Julian Edelman gets hurt. But they typically, you know, are in either three wide receiver sets or they bring in the extra tight end with now right. will be Dwayne Allen. So right. they're either an 11 or 12 personnel most of the time. And I really think that the best three options, you know, the top three is going to be Cooks, Hogan, and Danny Amendola in the slot.
I agree.
I think Mitchell has a chance to play a lot, but he's not a guy that they played too much in the slot last year, and no. I don't think there's any way that he's getting Hogan or Cooks off the field other than for a blow here and there. Yeah. So, you know, I really think that Danny Amendola gets elevated into that slot role. And with Cooks, I mean, I think that he's going to play in the slot some. You know, if you look across the league, there's two guys that I kind of envision. One, I don't think that Cooks is quite the type of player as him, but these two guys play a lot in the slot, T.Y. Hilton and Doug Baldwin. Two guys that play a ton in the slot, and their route trees are really deep posts from the slot, deep crossers into space, you know, stuff where they can use their speed right away.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where you'll see Cooks in the slot the most. And the reason for bumping him into the slot instead of keeping him outside, in my opinion, is to get him away from press coverage. When you bring guys inside, it usually allows for more free releases, especially against zone, you know, stuff like that, that can help him get that speed going. A guy like T.Y., I don't know how much you know too much about his game, but he is a very much a slot predominant player, and a lot of his big plays are created from lining up in the slot. And him and Cooks, to me, have a very similar skill set, both burners, you know, both guys that are trying to make big plays. Not so much Cooks. I don't see him being DeSean Jackson in this offense where you put him on the outside and you just tell him to run a nine and hope it works out, you know.
Right.
I see them scheming this thing a little bit more now, especially in maybe this offense, ask your opinion on this, maybe this offense becomes a little bit more vertical now that Julian Edelman is not in the mix. I mean, Cooks, Hogan, Gronk, three huge yards per reception guys in the league last year.
Yeah, I think I agree. You know, and we look at Cooks, we tend to look at Cooks as the guy who's the deep threat, but Hogan can be that guy too. I mean, he
right.
passed as well, and he had great yards per catch last year. I still think you can run shorter passes with these guys. I think it's just, you know, Cooks gets the label of being the deep threat because that's mostly what he's been in New Orleans. But like you said, I think he can line up in the slot. I think you can throw a lot of these wide receiver screens to these guys. And comeback routes, I think, are going to be, you know, huge in this offense again. So, you know, I don't think they're going to – I think it's a little late in the game to fundamentally change how they approach their offense. I think it's still going to be the same for the most part. I really do think, like you said, with Amendola now going to get getting some more snaps, I think, you know, I think that's an important piece now is having Amendola healthy, ready to go, you know, using his short area quickness to get open in the same way that Edelman did, you know, picking up first downs here and there. It's, you know, the offense, you know, the funny thing is, you know, even when Edelman went down the other night and the guys were probably just adjusting to, you know, maybe the thought of him, you know, being out for a longer period of time, that it executed pretty damn well.
Yeah, I mean, Edelman led that drive, basically the first touchdown drive, but they scored, 17 points after that, you know, also. So
yeah, pretty good. It was a little funny too to see the Lions try to cover Gronkowski with one guy, or and then play a zone here and there, and it's almost too easy when they play them. So it'll be interesting. I think they'll be okay. It's obviously something worth panicking over. Obviously, I feel like, but I don't think it's something that is going to kill their offense. I also think the running game looks a lot better than it did last year. Gillislee looks great. You know, Deion Lewis, Burkhead. I mean, all down the line. I mean, you know, a guy like DJ Foster might not make the 53, and he might have looked as good as any running back this entire preseason.
Right. We'll get to him.
You have to take that into account as well. It's not just the passing game. This offense has that going for it too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this just stems the greatest offense, Patriots offense ever, 19-0, you know, all of that overblown stuff that we've been hearing all offseason, really since they made the Cooks trade. You know, this kind of puts a damper on that, but maybe, you know, that's a good thing. Maybe now they're playing a little bit more with a little less pressure. Some guys, you know, I agree that Cooks has a lot more pressure on him now than he did pre-Edelman injury. But in other ways, if they don't go 19-0 now, not that that's ever the expectation, but, you know, that was on the table. Now it's I think it's off the table realistically. And I think that that's probably a good thing overall for this team, and that they're not going to have. I mean, obviously, if they start 6-0, 8-0, 10-0, they're going to start answering the questions again. But if they don't, and they run into some hiccups here with Edelman out, then maybe things get a little bit quieter on the front of being this perfect team or this unstoppable force or whatever it may be. You know, it's a tough injury, obviously. As a fan, you never want to see a guy that means as much to the Patriots and works as hard as Julian Edelman go down, and a guy that's so valuable in that role that he plays. But I really do think that we're going to see still a very explosive offense, and Brandon Cook should be fine. And as long as Gronkowski is healthy, I don't see any reason to really panic. And I think Danny Amendola is about to get 50, 60 catches at the minimum this season. So it'll be interesting to see how they use the guys that they do have available now. Let's move on here. We're going to do a little bit of bubble talk, little guys on the bubble. And let's just start with the guy that you already mentioned and segue right into DJ Foster, who just pops every time you watch these guys play. You know, he is a mean runner. He's quick. He can catch the ball. He's a good player. And it's just such a deep roster, and I just don't really know how he makes it. But, maybe a trade down the line involving him, maybe – they sneak him on. You know, what do you think?
I think they're going to try to sneak him onto the practice squad, and it's going to be tough to hold on to him. It might be one of those numbers games when it comes to thinking maybe there's so many guys who are going to get cut and there's so few practice squad spots that they maybe feel like he can just sort of sneak on the team. The only reason I feel like that's going to be tough is he did play so well this preseason, pretty much every game, and teams have seen that. You know, obviously these scouts come to these games, who knows? I don't think he can find a way to sneak onto this roster, because I feel like Bolden's going to make the team, and you've got enough holes now when you're getting rid of somebody like Coney Ealy. And you look at the defensive line, you can't really take somebody off of there who's on that bubble, I don't think, and try to make room for another running back when you've got so many already. So I feel like Foster's on the outside looking in, but it's too bad because, you know, he could really play a lot for some teams in this league. I mean, he's definitely a good player, but I just have a hard time when I look at the 53-man roster – where he fits in, or somebody from another position group would have to come off.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people out there are saying that he can be a receiver. So that adds to this now with Edelman out. Maybe Foster is a guy that could be a reserve in that slot role or in a more of a receiver role. I mean, I guess, but I just don't think that he's ever going to be in a regular, you know, full-time receiver. So, you know, he's a running back. Brandon Bolden, I don't want to get too off topic, but Brandon Bolden making this roster to me gets harder and harder by the day. With the injuries, with some of the guys that they're cutting, you know, holding a guy that is literally only going to play special teams at a really deep position is getting tougher and tougher. And DJ Foster is kind of in that same boat where, you know, against the third and fourth stringers in some of these preseason games, he looks like he's, you know, unbelievable out there. But, you know, when it comes down to it in an actual game and he's going up against the stars around the league, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily the same apples to apples comparison. And,
right.
You know, I would like to see them sneak him onto the practice squad. I have a little bit of a trade theory that we'll get into later that maybe could involve DJ Foster. But I do think that trading him or maybe trading another one of these running backs like a Deion Lewis, it could be on the table now that Foster has played himself into a roster spot at some place in this league. You know, I would think that if they try to get him onto the practice squad, and I'm any one of the teams that has been in here over the last couple of weeks and played the Patriots, I am seriously considering scooping him up. If I'm the Lions, if I'm the Texans, Jaguars, either one of those teams that have seen a lot of him at this point, some of those joint practices, that type of stuff, I would be surprised if one of those teams isn't interested in a guy like Foster. He's played well. He's played himself into this discussion. Last year he did the same thing, and then he just keeps building on it, and I think he looks even better than he did last year. So I think DJ Foster is going to be on a 53-man roster somewhere at some point this season, soon, whether it's in New England or elsewhere. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And so now – I guess, like, if we want to move on to Adam Butler, that's sure. A guy I wrote about this Sunday, and I feel like he makes the team. I do. I think he's versatile. I think when you get rid of a guy like Coney Ealy, I think they felt more confident in doing that, knowing that they had a guy like Butler. The thing that Butler really sticks out to me. He can play nose guard. He can play a three technique. He can play even a five. You know, in some situations, a straight up four. He's somebody that can line up almost anywhere on the defensive line. Now that he's down to 285, 287, you know, he's got good quickness. He's a strong guy. I think. You know, he's had some really bright moments in the preseason games. And he's just, you know, I feel like when you got a guy like that, especially given their, you know, situation right now with all the guys that have come off with Derek Rivers getting hurt and all that, losing Ninkovich to retirement, Dietrich Wise's concussion, you know, we'll, who knows what that's going to end up looking like. So, you know, I think they need Adam Butler on this team, so I think he makes it.
Yeah, I think we doubled up on the Adam Butler this week, because I did a film breakdown of him. Came out last night, this morning. So, you know, I really looked at the tape of his and to see what, you know, has really been going on with him. And he's an interesting player. I don't think that they have another player on the defensive front that can penetrate in one gap the way that he can. He's got a great get off, really good first step, quickness in his feet for a guy hit that size. Obviously the 6'5" long arms helps situation as well. He's a really good run defender already. Really good against the run. Athletic. That first step helps him penetrate the line and shoot gaps. Disruptive is really the word I would use. to describe him in the run game. I mean, he's been about as good run defense-wise as Alan Branch really has been in the limited time that we've seen Branch. I you know, give him that. But, you know, they don't have a lot of guys that are of that ilk amongst their big guy defensive linemen. You know, Alan Branch is kind of a one-gapper, so to speak, but he's kind of just a do-it-all type guy. Malcolm Brown is not. You know, Malcolm Brown is a classic inside two-gapping defensive tackle that's going to, you know, be a big dude right there in the middle and hold his ground and do stuff like that. Larry Guy is more of a tactician with his hands and just kind of knows how to play with leverage and knows how to play football. And then you got Adam Butler, who is all of a sudden, you know, running train through the A-gap against the Lions and blowing up run plays. And it's just different from the other guys on the team, which I think is a good thing for him. You know, he's not like the other players necessarily. So that's a good thing. And like you said, he's got some versatility to him. He can play inside. He can play outside, which is nice. I don't think that they play him much as a pass rusher at a five or a four technique, but I definitely think that he can play inside as a pass rusher more as a three technique over the guard or something. I like the player. I think that he has a little bit of that. Who was it? Was it Anthony Johnson a few years ago that kind of came out in practice and in preseason? A little bit of that in there. So I don't think that he's, you know, I'm talking about Aaron Donald here. But, you know, he's a good player, and I think that he deserves to make the 53. He's earned his way onto it. He's played his way. Obviously, the opportunity has presented itself with, some injuries and the release of Coney Ealy to kind of, you know, earn a roster spot, and he's taken advantage.
Yeah, I think his best roles are, like you said, is an interior pass rusher. I think he could be, you know, when they go to a 3-4, he could be a nice 3-4 defensive end. He's a big guy with it, like you said, with his length. You know, the fact that he's, you know, 6'5", it seems like he's got the arms to fight off tackles and guards and stuff. I just feel like he has a lot of potential to add to a pass rush that really needs – that really a pass rush that's lost a lot with some of the guys that, you know, they've lost here or either released or what have you. I thought they expected Coney Ealy to provide a lot of that, and he's, you know, he just didn't. So, you know, maybe a lot of their pass rush this year comes from the interior.
I'm hoping that's going to be the case, because Trey Flowers and Hightower are the only guys that are going to bring it off the edge right now.
Exactly. I mean, I think they're going to have to in some instances, at least to start the season. It always feels like they'll figure out something after the midway point.
I agree. I think that with Butler, you know, you see that Patriots – it's really a five-man front, but it's with two outside linebackers, and they usually have three down linemen, and they're usually bigger guys. Right. You know, they don't typically – one of them will definitely be Trey Flowers. One of them, to start, will probably be Alan Branch in the middle on the nose, and then you could have – situations where Adam Butler is the other defensive end, and then you have them flanked by Hightower at strong side linebacker, and probably Van Noy at the weak side. So I that is the Patriots go-to front right now, is that kind of five-man rover type front that they run. I think that Adam Butler has a chance to really play defensive end, or maybe even more inside than that, closer to the nose, if need be. I think that type of versatility and also the get off that he has, which is really next level stuff. I think that first step of his is going to get him onto this roster.
I think next we should move on to tight ends, that being James O'Shaughnessy and Jacob Hollister. I think we've seen a little bit to like from both of them this preseason. O'Shaughnessy has shown some good and some bad. I know he dropped a pass against the Lions. You know, you probably think that, you know, O'Shaughnessy's the better blocker and gives you a more well-rounded skill set than Hollister. And I do feel like even though Hollister really flashed in some of these games, you could get him on the practice squad without without losing him. You know, maybe I'm wrong, but I think having O'Shaughnessy make the team, even if you, if you keep three tight ends, that's not necessarily a slam dunk. But if you keep three tight ends, I think O'Shaughnessy's the guy, and then you try to sneak Jacob Hollister onto the practice squad. Just curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that Hollister definitely could make it to the practice squad. He had that one big game in the first preseason game, but unless he really popped in some of those joint practices with those other teams, he hasn't really done much since. He hasn't really gotten much playing time since. So I think that that is a big reason why I think O'Shaughnessy is on this team and is in the plans, is because as soon as he was healthy, the snaps in those preseason games, you know, it was a lot. He played, I think, almost 40 snaps in the second preseason game, played a bunch of snaps in his third one as well. As soon as he was healthy, he was higher on the depth chart than Hollister. It was obvious. You know, he was coming into the game in the first and second quarter. He was playing a little bit with the starters. He was definitely playing more with Jimmy. So as soon as that happened, I kind of was like, all right, Hollister, as much as I liked the story and wish that, you know, there was enough room on the roster for him, it looks like O'Shaughnessy is in the plans. And I would expect O'Shaughnessy to make the team for them to carry three tight ends, mainly for blocking purposes with O'Shaughnessy. But he's also shown a little bit of pass-catching ability in the preseason, and he's caught in a few passes and looked okay in doing that as well. I think that he's on the team, O'Shaughnessy. I think that he played too quickly, too early when he got healthy again in these preseason games for me to think that they are planning on cutting him at this point.
Right.
You know, and they cut like a guy like Coney Ealy, you know, who saw him playing in the fourth quarter of a preseason game, and you're like, uh-oh, you know, this is not trending in the right direction. Where with O'Shaughnessy, it was like, let's get this guy some first half snaps with some guys that matter, you know?
Yeah. Then I think, circling back to the receivers, does Edelman's injury create a spot for Austin Carr?
To be clear, I did not want this to happen this way, all right?
Yeah.
I want everyone to know that I definitely did not want Julian Edelman to get hurt so that Austin Carr could make the team. That was the last thing that I wanted to happen.
You have an Austin Carr fan club card, and you are the president of that club, and for good reason, he's a good player. And I think he's been good all the time so far. I mean, the guy just knows how to get open. He's got great hands. You know, is it worth it? Do you put him on the 53, or do you feel like you can sneak him onto the practice squad? I'm mixed on this. You know, I'm not quite sure where I stand, but right now I'm kind of leaning, unless they make a trade of some sort, I kind of see him sneaking on.
Yeah, I think that I don't think you're going to get him to the practice squad. Other teams beat writers are already, saying things about the eventual release of Austin Carr in New England and how he's could be a hot waiver wire commodity once that happens. So I think it's unlikely to get him all the way to the practice squad. I would love to see him make the team, obviously. I think that he has a role as a backup to Danny Amendola, really the only other guy on this roster when you really break it down, that if Amendola, who's not the most durable, were to get hurt as well, you know, who else is really – Malcolm Mitchell isn't going in there. I mean, I guess you could put Chris Hogan in there if you want to make that argument, you can. But I definitely think that Austin Carr has something, going with this Patriots offense. That role is perfect for him. I've been saying that for a long time now, obviously. I think that it happens. I think that it definitely happens if a guy like Matthew Slater, for example, who obviously we don't look at it as a wide receiver necessarily, but it matters. If he starts the season on PUP, then that, you know, changes everything for Austin Carr too. So I think that he makes the team initially out of camp, unless they can find a team that is willing to part with a, you know, some sort of draft pick at late round compensation so that they can get a, you know, get Carr on the team before he hits waivers and goes through that entire process, which is possible. But I would like to see him on the team solely because I've always thought that he was Danny Amendola's replacement eventually if they were to able to keep him around. And now that position kind of just gets even more important with Amendola's role increasing.
Right, so. I agree. And that circles back, I guess, to what we were talking about maybe two episodes ago when we were saying, all right, well, at what point are some of these young guys going to either take over or – you know, make the team over some guys who are either older or, you know, on their way out eventually, like soon. Who knows how long Amendola is going to play. So, you know, do you want a guy like Austin Carr on the roster so you can make sure there's somebody in place and you don't have to break in somebody else next year? I think so, you know. So I'm leaning towards him being on the team, but it's tough. There's a lot of
it's a numbers game.
Yeah, it really is.
Let's talk Cyrus Jones and then let's get to the trade thing. Okay. But we got is Cyrus on or off? I think he's playing his way on right now.
I do too.
If he keeps returning like that and doesn't fumble, well, knock on wood, like he's gonna make this team.
I think he's found a little bit of confidence, which
he looks like a different guy out there,
which is really, really all that matters with him. You know, like as long as he can find some sort of boost mentally, and that's all really what it was in terms of what I was thinking. It was a mental thing. You know, when you start messing up like that over and over and over again, it gets into your head. But if you get a little bit of confidence and can start, you know, the ball rolling in the right direction, which it has, then you have sort of earned another look. And so I think he'll be on there. It was going to be tough to get rid of him in his second year as a second round draft pick as it is. That I don't think Belichick wanted to do that in the first place, but now he's got enough
reason.
Yeah, he's got enough reason to keep him on the team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that one return that he had was against Houston that kind of got the confidence rolling. You could see it. You could see the weight kind of come off his shoulders a little bit. He had his first big return as a pro. You know, the sidelines all fired up. Dante Scarnecchia is getting in his face and cheering him on. And all of a sudden, he kind of looks like not defensively as much. He kind of is still struggling at corner, but as a returner, he looks like a different guy. He looks like a much more confident guy that's using all of those return skills that we've heard about. And he's become a pretty solid punt returner the last, you know, two games or so. A couple of questionable decisions with a fair catch on the 5-yard line, but that's, you know, at least he didn't fumble it at the 5-yard line. So, you know, it's progress, baby steps, and he's had some good returns, and I think that, like you said, at least this gives Belichick a reason to all of us knuckleheads that that he should be on the roster, which is, you know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, maybe if he makes the team, you know, we're a little bit more questioning why he's still here. But now I think that he has a good shot of making it. But yeah, all right. I think that's pretty much everybody on the bubble that means anything. So let's get into this trade discussion. So basically, I picked out four names that have been in rumors or kind of just really fit the Patriots' needs currently that are out there that the Patriots might be able to make a trade. We'll start with this one, and the Dolphins and Adam Gase kind of put the kibosh on this morning, apparently. But Jarvis Landry I believe it was old friend Michael Lombardi at The Ringer that was reporting this was apparently available, and the Dolphins were listening. Landry is a free agent at the end of this season, be a 2018 free agent, and he will get paid. But what would you give up? The theme of the segment is what would you give up for? What would you give up for Jarvis Landry?
I saw on Twitter Doug Kide posting about this, and Kevin Duffy agreed, and I'm with them. I'd give up a second round pick for sure. Jarvis fits so well in this offense; it's not even funny. I mean, he's absolutely the type of guy that's made for an offense like this. He's young. He's improved his yards per catch every single year he's been in the league. He gets open very easily. He runs great routes. He's got incredible hands, and he's exceptional after the catch. So I've been following this kid since he was a junior in high school because, I follow recruiting and stuff like that. I think he's probably one of the most productive guys on a bad team for most of his career that you can find. Even in last year's playoff game against the Steelers, where they didn't do anything, he really showed up. He did well against the Patriots both games last year. He really tore them up. I feel like if you're going to, go after a receiver, he's the guy to get. But I just don't feel like the Dolphins – well, there's two things. Number one, I've been following Omar Kelly a lot, who's the Sun Sentinel beat writer for the Dolphins, and he thinks – that they're sort of far apart in terms of their talks when it comes that they're not really in the middle anywhere. So that's one thing. But I also feel like the Dolphins would not be smart to let him go. So I think I don't see him leaving the Dolphins. But if you're looking at a receiver, I really like Jarvis. I've always liked him.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Jarvis as a player in terms of giving him this massive contract after this year that he's going to get. I think that he is a very, very good at what he does player, yeah, which is something that is not to be underrated. I'm not saying he's a bad football player. He's really good, really good player. He's just really good at – he's really good with the ball in his hands. That's first and foremost maybe one of the best – players at any position in this league with the football in his hands, creating yards after the catch and stuff like that. I think he's limited in his route tree. He's not a guy that is going to get vertical. He doesn't have that breakaway speed. He doesn't really create much separation more than 10 to 15 yards down the field at a time. So right. He's not a guy that I would look at and say, let's give a first-round pick like they did with Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks is a guy that can win at all three levels of the defense and is really a game-breaking type receiver, and that's why you give up a first-round pick for a guy like that. Yeah. Landry is a slot receiver that's really good at being a slot receiver.
Right.
But last year in Miami, he was in the slot 90% of the time, pretty much, more than Edelman. He is a true slot guy. With that being said, he's one of the best in the league at that, and that is an ultra-valuable position, not obviously for the Patriots, but it's turning out to be an ultra-valuable position throughout the entire league at this point. So he's going to get a huge contract. I would trade a second-round pick for him as well, just because of his fit in this offense as an slot guy, and also after the catch in this offense, he would be a nightmare. He would have all sorts of openings and all sorts of space to make plays after the catch like Edelman does or like a lot of guys do in this offense. So I would trade a second round pick for him. Let's move on to the next one that is a guy that is kind of a unsung hero that, I don't think he's available. If I'm the Dallas Cowboys, I'm not trading him, but Cole Beasley, his name is going to come up, I think, in this context with Edelman out as another guy that they could go and get because of his ability to play inside as well.
Yeah, I don't know what you'd give up for him, but I don't think the Cowboys would in their right mind at all ever get rid of him, especially right now with Elliott out. I think it's such a long shot. He's a good player. but he's super dependable for them, and he's in a lot of ways their best receiver in terms of his reliability. I mean, you got another reliable guy at tight end with Witten. They've got more talented guys, but he's one of those guys where, you know, he's just always there. You know, he's just always there. He's always open. And I don't think the Cowboys are dumb enough to get rid of him.
No, he's one of the – Cole Beasley is like the advanced stats guru's hero, you know. You look up like where he ranks in like Football Outsiders metrics and PFF's advanced metrics and stuff like that. Cole Beasley is like a top 10 wide receiver to Football Outsiders, which is crazy to think about. But when you watch him play, you see the value in the offense that he has because he is so adept at getting open in the underneath part of the field, and they have so many weapons in Dallas. You know, it really frees up a lot of stuff. And he's kind of like a Julian Edelman almost for them, where, you know, he makes these little catches and the numbers at the end of the day are good, but they're not, you know, they're not Antonio Brown good. But when you see the entire offense play, you see his importance and his role really contributes to the rest of the players being able to do what they do. I think he's a lot like Edelman in that sense. And Marcus Mosier is a good Cowboys follow on Twitter. I forget where he writes for, but he's a beat writer down there in Dallas. You know, tweeted out a bunch of Cole Beasley gifts and stuff like that, and showed, you know, how he basically runs the Dallas Cowboys offense, more or less, passing offense, that is, obviously. I don't know what they would be. I don't think Dallas is trading him either. I don't know what the Patriots would give him. He's probably another guy that is in that second to third round pick range, though, to pry him out of Dallas with what he's done recently. And that's a pretty steep price for a guy like Cole Beasley. But when you really put on the tape and you look at the advanced metrics, he's as good as anyone in the league is right now. So I think that that's a tough trade to happen. But I know that people are going to ask about it just because of the similarities to Edelman. The next one is kind of over the summer, it had a lot of traction. Now it's getting slowed down a little bit, but I really like this one, and that's Michael Kendricks in Philadelphia. Linebacker, weak side linebacker, not a pass rusher, but a guy that I think could add a lot of really good depth to the linebacker position and start for this Patriots team. And there's some trade avenues that you could kind of see it working between the Eagles and the Patriots. They have good relations. They did the Eric Rowe trade around this time last year. So that's something to keep in mind. But another thing to keep in mind is that the Eagles' backfield is a disaster right now.
Right.
LeGarrette Blount apparently could be a surprise cut. They cut Ryan Matthews a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Could they call and say, let's do some sort of trade with Michael Kendricks and Deion Lewis?
Right.
I don't think it's that crazy. I think that Kendricks in 2013 and 2014 had really good years. One of those years he had over 100 tackles in Chip Kelly's defense, 3-4. Where he played the weak side, and he would just use his athleticism to make plays, running sideline to sideline to make tackles and stuff like that. You already have Hightower to play the strong side. You throw Michael Kendricks in there instead of like a Kyle Van Noy. I think that's an immediate upgrade.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it would be possible if you were willing to give up somebody like Deion Lewis. If I'm the Patriots, I'm just not willing to give up Deion Lewis.
Right.
But it's something that could work. I mean, that the, like you said, the pieces fit there. I think the reason why those talks have died down a little bit from this summer in terms of moving that that guy is that I feel like he's played better this preseason than what they expected. So. I'm not so sure they're still in the mood to move him, but I mean, obviously, if they could grab one of the million Patriots running backs that seems to be playing so well right now, I think they would go for it. But It's also another long shot deal.
Yeah, these trades are tough to predict, but I just think that from a fit standpoint, when you think about it, you put him on the other side, on the outside, opposite to Hightower. Then you have Van Noy, you have Roberts, you have Harris, kind of in the more in the middle, and you have just a lot more depth from a Patriots perspective. And I think Kendricks is a guy that could clean up a lot of tackles in this Patriots defense. He did it in Philly when he was right, and last year he only played 27% of their defensive snaps. He wasn't really in the mix. He wanted a release or a trade, and they didn't give it to him. Sounds like they're going to play him a little bit more this year. But I guess when we were talking about it earlier and how well DJ Foster has played, I don't think that DJ Foster is good enough to be in this trade. But maybe the Patriots are more willing to part with a guy like Deion Lewis, where they can put DJ Foster on the roster, and it's not a huge drop-off from Lewis to Foster. I mean, it's not, you know, DJ Foster isn't as good as Deion, but it's not anywhere near as big of a drop-off as it might have been last year to those two guys. So they have some wiggle room there at running back, and the Eagles need a running back, and the Patriots need a linebacker. So it's it kind of makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. And if you trade Deion Lewis also for Kendricks, Kendricks is making about $4 million this year and has a decent cap hit, but Lewis is making an okay amount of money too, so maybe that offsets a little bit of the money transaction there also. I think that the Eagles and the Patriots are an interesting trade partner, whether it's for Kendricks or somebody else, to monitor because of their team needs and because of some of the guys that they have that are kind of fringe players for them at the moment. You know, the Patriots have a lot of running backs. The Eagles have some guys that could help out the Patriots as well, both offensive linemen and linebackers. So it's something to monitor. The last one that I had here is kind of a low-risk, high-reward type move that I don't think will take much at all to get him. But that's Reggie Ragland in Buffalo, who is apparently might not make the 53. So this is a move that I kind of am saying, like, maybe the Patriots give them a conditional sixth or seventh round pick just so that they get Ragland before he hits waivers.
Yeah. Ragland is one of these guys that I feel like is a talented guy, but I'm not sure how much he would help, but you know, he's an Alabama guy, and you never know with Belichick and Alabama guys. And you know, it, like you said, linebacker is a need. And you know, I think it is a low risk, high reward move. Like you said, you know, I don't think you could really, I don't think you'd really bash a move like that just because you're not really giving up much. It wouldn't really take too much.
Right, like out of all these trades that I made up, all of them are like pipe dreams, except this one I think could actually happen because you really wouldn't have to give up too much.
Right, I could see it. And again, it's a guy from Buffalo, so of course it
may have... Right, the Buffalo thing, the Alabama thing. I just think that David Harris right now looked really good in the third preseason game, and we're all expecting him to play a lot. But he's old. He's 34 years old. Ragland is a guy that has struggled mightily since coming into the league, really can't find a niche in Buffalo. He's a run-first guy. He's better suited to play in this league than Nalon and Roberts, but that type of style of play where he's been a liability in coverage and been, you know, okay against the run. So that you have to take that into consideration. But I just think that he would add some nice depth at the middle linebacker position behind David Harris and maybe ahead of Nalon and Roberts, who has struggled. I don't know if he could do that right away, but maybe he plays into that type of role. And he's pre-draft, he got compared a little bit to Hightower because of the Alabama thing. He's been nowhere near the player that Hightower has been, and he's been injured. So that's, you know, part of it too. But I think that he's a guy that they could bring in and play middle linebacker in a pinch, and he would at least stop the run. and he could start with that and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the type of guy they – like would bring in at this point too, you know.
Right.
You know, it's that sort of guy that was expected to do a lot but hasn't. But you know, you could get cheap, and you know, you could try to see if you can squeeze something out of that orange, you know, or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that he's an interesting one to monitor, because if he's truly going to get straight up cut in Buffalo, I think he's a little bit, his former second round pick 2 years ago, a little bit too talented to just get straight up cut.
Yeah.
And maybe they could find a trade partner, and you know that the Patriots are more than willing to part with those conditional picks that they did for a guy like Kyle Van Noy, for example.
Right. All right. So I think that's all we're hoping to cover. Were you able to watch Game of Thrones last night or no?
Because I was able to watch it.
I was.
We're at the 50-minute mark right now. So if you want the spoilers to, you can cut it out right now.
Yeah.
If you want to shut it off. But yes, I did watch it. The finale was one of my favorite episodes of Game of Thrones in a long time. I thought, obviously, it was, you know, a little bit of in the moment right now, but I really thought that it really came through in some of the storylines that were all over the place throughout the course of the season that people were complaining about. Really, the outcomes made sense, and the outcomes were kind of what we were all pulling for the most part.
Yeah.
So that was helpful.
Cool.
That's my Game of Thrones analysis right there for you.
It's a quick one. All right, man. So I think that wraps it up. And so this last preseason game is coming up against the Giants.
Well, here we are. Here we go. A week from Thursday.
Yeah, a week from Thursday. It feels like it's crazy to see it happen this quickly. But, you know, here we are. Is there anything else that you're working on, looking forward to as far as the preview section? Oh, you teased the preview section last week.
Yeah, so I got the thing in the preview section, kind of an expose on the offense, the maturation of offenses over the generations of football, kind of what changed and statistically and also just philosophically, what changed and kind of led to this era of quick passing, you know, that type of game. I don't want to call it dink and dunk because that's like a curse word in New England, but you know, that's kind of thing. So that'll be out in the Herald. What is that, next week?
Next
right
week.
Before I think Thursday, maybe September 6th or something like that. And then on Twitter, Easy Lazar, just follow along, and that's where you'll find everything. What about you?
Same thing with the special section. I'm doing something on what the defense has to do to make sure there's some stat about, I think the top 10 offenses of all time, of like only one of them has won the Super Bowl or something. So what that defense has to do to keep up. I'm doing a little, sidebar on James White, you know, him moving forward after having such a great Super Bowl. And then I'm doing a little half chart, half article, as Sean likes to call it, a chartical on the AFC East, looking at these other teams and also from an offensive perspective with these other teams. So yeah,
look at that, a lot going on for Adam.
Yeah,
that's a big slate, but yeah, that's awesome. James White, I know we're dragging here, but James White is I feel bad a little bit for James White. Like he goes and he like has the best Super Bowl you could ever ask for any player. And I think he'll be in the mix, but now Burkhead and Gillisley are in here looking like studs. And you know, James White's kind of the third running back again, but that's life, I guess. But that's all the time we have for tonight or today. Whenever you're listening to this, go follow us on iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes. You know, have an iTunes page, subscribe to us on SoundCloud, do all that good stuff, leave us a review. But we'll be back probably next week looking at Game 1, Patriots, Chiefs, next Thursday. Hard to believe, but we're here already, Week 1. But for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. We'll be back next week.